Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show. Welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Brian Lomax.
And I'm Josh Berger. In today's episode, we are going to discuss how to finish off a set or a match. And I think it really is a universal experience that players have a tough time in these situations, whether these are players really of any level, junior players, adult players, college players, and as well as professional players. And you see it with when you're watching professional tennis, the ATP and WTA tours, you see players get into these situations and get tight and get nervous. And that might look a little bit different for each player. For some players, you know, once they get to that state, they're getting really upset or angry with themselves. You might see them yelling or throwing their racket. With other players, you might see them stop going for their shots. With some players, their decision-making really seems to suffer. And they start maybe going for shots that they wouldn't normally go for, which leads to more unforced errors. But I think the reason why we wanted to bring up this topic today is because I think most players, if not every player, has been in this situation where they've been ready to try to close out a set or close out a match, and they've struggled. And so in this episode, we'll discuss, first of all, what are some of those reasons why? Why do players struggle in those situations? And then start to offer some tools, some tips that players can utilize to hopefully give them a better chance to handle these situations when you're in them in the future.
I think one of the reasons I'm glad we're talking about this topic, Josh, it goes back to our conversation several months ago with Howard Bryant. You know, great conversation, but one of the things that, you know, he talked about that he's a tennis guy, he's a baseball guy, and that something in common between the two sports is this necessity of finishing. And that is a challenge in tennis, because you have to earn that last game, that last point to actually end the match. And in some ways, finishing applies to a lot of the aspects of tennis. You have to learn how to finish a point, per se, finish a game, finish a set, finish a match. There's no clock here to save us. There's no clock that allows us to coast until the end and just wait it out. And that makes this whole thing a challenge. And if you don't earn it, what can happen is that your opponent can snatch it away from you. And because there's never a 100% certainty you will win, and there's never a 0% certainty. Well, I'm sorry, 100%. Yeah, there's no 100% or 0% certainty either way, right? It's always somewhere in between. And so just because you're in a finishing situation doesn't mean the whole thing couldn't reverse itself and you find yourself on the other end. So I think knowing how to finish in tennis is sort of one of the greatest and toughest arts of the sport. And it's one that is certainly worthy of attention, you know, certainly for us to talk about it, but also worthy of attention in terms of how to practice this and understand your own particular challenges with it. Understand your own particular process or recipe for dealing with this and moving forward with it. So it's a great, great topic for us to get into.
Yeah, no, and I think you brought up a good point here that you want to figure out what works best for you and your recipe, your process may be different from somebody else's, and that's okay. You know, for some people, it might be that they really want to be very clear about what their patterns are. And okay, these are the patterns that work for me. These are the patterns that I'm sticking with no matter what's been happening out there. These are my patterns. This is how I play and you know, where I find success. And for another person, it might be more about, can I be aware enough of the dynamics of the match to really try to come up with the best possible playing style and game plan in this moment? And that might be a little bit different based on who that player is playing. And I'm not saying there's necessarily one right approach. I think in general, you want to embody certain aspects of both in terms of playing from your strengths, playing to your patterns, but also being able to make adjustments as need be. But I think, as you said, there's, you know, there's different methods that might work for each player, but figuring out over time through trial and error, I will say, what works best for you is really key here.
Yeah, it's experience and experimentation and the ability to practice those things. I think this also gets into the, you know, when we talk about practicing something like finishing, it brings a lot more depth to what we mean by practice. Because, you know, we talk often, Josh, about how everything is practice. But sometimes people misinterpret that to be, you know, and we say that because we don't want them to take the pressure off. And so they're like, oh, it's just practice, so it doesn't matter. But that's not what we mean. Practice does matter. And because practice is about how you will perform. So if you look at practice as something that doesn't matter, then will you actually practice with the kind of intent necessary to improve something like this? And so practice does matter. And we want to see practice as really more just of a type of phase, I guess, of our training. Competition is also a phase of our training. And it's the place to begin to start the experience and the experimentation of what works for you. Of course, you'll have to go test it out under other pressurized conditions. But if we can bring more intention to the practice court around something like this and create that pressure in our mind, because we can do that. We do that in visualization and imagery all the time. We ask players to bring forth the emotions that you want to use. Well, we could also bring forth perhaps those uncomfortable emotions that we do experience. We know what they feel like. So bring that forth. Bring it forth on the court too, so that you can learn to manage through it. So it's, yes, you can say, oh, there's nothing on the line or whatever, but we can make that happen. We have the ability to create that sensory experience out there. And I think that's going to be an important part of our, you know, talking through the solutions here, talking through the ways of practicing and learning to improve our ability to finish these things, is to bring forth those emotions and those feelings and to look at practice differently, perhaps, depending on your particular perspective on it, and see it as a very serious type of thing. So that you're going into it with a great intention. All right, I'm going to work on finishing situations. I'm going to play from 5-2, or I'm going to play from 4-1, or whatever it is. We're going to play 10-point tiebreakers, because ultimately, the point of practice is to practice something to a point of overlearning, so that it becomes second nature. And there are going to be, I think, a lot of different components to the process and recipe for every person. Some of those things might become second nature more quickly, but ultimately we want to get into a place where we're serving for a match at 5-4 and we know exactly what to do. We know exactly how we want to feel and it just feels normal to a certain extent, right?
Absolutely. And that only happens through repetition, through being in that place time and time again. And that can be through match play. But I think ideally that's a combination of matches and practice. And I know I've mentioned this before, but my master's dissertation was about how college coaches viewed mental toughness and how they tried to build mental toughness. And a lot of the coaches that I talked to talked about this idea of this difference between practice and matches, and you know, the pressure that's felt and the sort of lack of consequence that practice sometimes feels like. It feels like a situation where you can miss, you can lose, you know, things can happen, but hey, it's just practice. It's just practice at the end of the day. But instead of having that sort of mentality, can we really use that practice time to simulate what's happening in matches? And can we add pressure? Can we add, can we, you know, really try to simulate some of these situations like what you brought up and maybe some others too? Can we simulate that situation of trying to serve for a match from 5-2 up? Can we simulate a 10-point tiebreaker? Can we simulate, you know, you're serving at 5-4, but it's love 30. Can you really try to put yourself in some of these situations? And I think the coach has an important role to play here too, right? I mean, if two players go out on their own to the local park or the local tennis club and play, unless they're really driven and really have this specific intention to do this, I think it's maybe more likely that a coach who may or may not be listening right now encourages this and says, all right, you know, maybe it's for that 3-5 or that 4-0 clinic. And they say, all right, today we're going to play from, you know, we're going to do a drill, including serving, where people are going to be trying to serve out sets, and we're serving from 5-4, and you know, that this could take you one game, or this could be, okay, you get broken and then it's 5-all and maybe somebody wins 7-5, or maybe it goes to the tiebreaker, but play it out from there. Or maybe it's 5-2, as you mentioned, or maybe it's 10-point tiebreaker. Or, you know, I think people can be creative with what that actually looks like in practice. But I think having some sort of way where you can use that practice time and really try to design drills to simulate what a player is going to experience. Because as we mentioned, every player has probably been in this situation and will be in this situation again. And it's an essential part of winning a set. You have to finish it. So can you find ways to practice that? And then, you know, once a player has been in that situation before, has successfully been in it, you know, has successfully served out a match, has closed out a set, and also maybe has dealt with some of the turbulence, has had to be resilient, right? They serve forward at 5-2. They got broken. It's 5-3. Their opponent held 5-4 now. And then maybe they got broken again, and now it's 5-all. And what does your mindset look like at 5-all? Are you able to be resilient in that moment? You know, I think a lot of players will fold in that moment and crumble, right? And they're so focused on what happened those last three games. And I should have won this set 6-2, or this set should be over, or I shouldn't still be out here, or whatever, you know, using should, or I'm supposed to have won this set, or things like that. But instead, can we have the resilience to know that these things will happen? There will be those ups and downs, but we need to be able to reset. We need to be able to put it behind us and remain mentally tough in those moments. And I think through practicing these situations on the practice court, and again, through repetition, not just doing it once, but doing it many times, when you're in that situation in a match, you're going to feel a lot more confidence because you've been through it before. And you also know that if, you know, just because somebody fights back and starts to gain some momentum on their own, doesn't mean that it's over. The match or the set can certainly take another turn at that point. So I think, finding ways to really build that into practice time, and especially structured practice time, I think is really key here.
For sure. You know, and so let's, I want to get your thoughts, Josh, on if we kind of rewind a bit, go back to the barriers. What are the things that make finishing in tennis so tough?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things. I think in terms of sort of where I would start, I think it's the fact that people start focusing more on the result than on the process. And, you know, I think this concept comes up a lot, but I think especially when the finish line is in sight, when someone's serving for a match, when someone is within a game of winning a set, it's very easy, and I think it's typical for people to start thinking about winning that match, and what is that winning that match or winning that set, and what is that going to mean? What is that going to mean for my UTR? What is that going to mean when I, you know, what is that going to mean to me when I beat this player? Maybe they're a rival. Maybe they've beaten me in the past. What are my friends going to think? What are my parents going to think? What are my teammates going to think? What are my rivals going to think when they see that score on the UTR website? And it's very easy to start thinking about the result. Or who am I playing next? Maybe I'm playing in a tournament and I'm supposed to have another match later that day or the next day. So, you know, it can be very easy to start thinking ahead towards that. So I think those are definitely some of the challenges that it's very easy to start focusing on the result instead of our process. And when we talk about the process, we mean, you know, what do you have to do each point to be successful? How do you need to play? How can you attack your opponent's weaknesses? How are you spending your time in between points? How are you moving your feet? How are you tracking the ball? All of these critical aspects of the sport that really dictate how you end up playing. Instead of focusing on those things, you start focusing on the result and on winning. And that tends, as we've said so many times, that really tends to have a negative impact on how somebody ends up playing.
I agree. I think the score becomes a bigger factor as you move along in the set, as you get closer to the end. And I think it also taps into one of our natural human cognitive biases that we have, which is loss aversion. We tend to think more about what we have to lose than what we have to gain. And it's not, as I've said to many players, it's not like you're 100% focused on protecting your lead and 0% focused on actually finishing the set. But it's enough to get you into more of a play not to lose mode very often. So if you're up 5-2, you're thinking perhaps a little bit more about preventing 5-3 than you are about creating 6-2. And so that's just a natural human cognitive bias that we all have. We all think about what we have to lose a little bit more because we have this distaste for unpleasant emotions. We want to avoid that. And of course, this comes from more of an existential threat detector, yet there's no existential threat on the court, but we may feel it. Like, as you said, Josh, there are consequences sort of outside of the match, whether it's through your rating or simply what other people might think about you. You know, the evaluation of others is often something very present in the mind of a tennis player. So it's natural. We feel like we do have a lot to lose. Yes, it's not existential, but it feels terrible, or could, right? So I think that can then lead to, like, I wrote down some things that I thought would be helpful for all of the players or listeners to begin to think about in terms of how they want to put together their own process or recipe. And I want to get your thoughts on some of these, Josh. So number one, which I think maybe addresses the whole loss aversion piece, is, well, we need to create a new perspective on this. And we've talked about stuff like challenge mindset, embracing the challenge type of thing, as being a way of wanting to be in the situation rather than trying to avoid being in the situation. And I think through that, we can construct emotions. As we've discussed, I think, a few times, emotions, you know, emotions are not created as a reaction to something. They're actually from a prediction model. So the better our perspective, the better we can facilitate and create emotions that we believe will be more adaptive. So there's that. So, and I think for the average player, it's like, all right, what are the right emotions for me? They may be different for all of us, right? I think discipline and intention. Some of this might go back to our discussion on rules, but you know, can you maintain discipline with your process and your decision-making through this difficult phase of the match? Can you have the intention to hit your targets and the intention to play your patterns? I think body awareness is really important here, meaning understanding your state of tension or relaxation, interpreting different feelings in your body in such a way that you can channel them into the right emotions, I think, and how to manage that. Certainly focus, being present, being process-oriented. We want to, that could be a piece of it. I think confidence relative to trust, and then belief relative to optimism, the ability to be optimistic. And then you've already brought this term up, Josh, but I think it's really important that we recognize resilience as a part of the process, because yeah, you could be serving 5-4, love 30, or it could go to 5-5, but that doesn't mean you're out of it. How do we use resilience to bounce back and maintain focus and intention on the rest of these items? So what are your thoughts, Josh, on some of those items? And maybe there are more in your mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think one that we haven't brought up yet is the other player. Mm-hmm. The fact that the other player is down and they're going to want to fight back. They're,
they may, you know, have the, nothing the other to lose, player, right? Right.
Exactly.
So that creates that dynamic. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. And I think, you know, focusing on that for a second is critical too, because they have, as you just said, they have nothing to lose. They may already have accepted sort of their fate in terms of that set or that match. And that can bring about a certain level of freedom, a certain level of looseness that can lead to increasing their own level. So, you know, I think it often takes two to tango in situations like this, where one player, the one who's protecting the lead or feels like they're protecting the lead, gets tight, starts thinking about the result. The other player loosens up and starts to really play a lot better because they've let go of the result. They have nothing to lose. They're going for it. And I think that can really create an interesting dynamic where both players are impacted by the situation, by the score, but sort of in opposite ways. And it can really cause some interesting things, and it can turn a 5-2 lead into 5-5 pretty quickly. And then I've seen it happen where once it gets to 5-5, the dynamics can switch. And that player that was playing so loose for those past three games all of a sudden realizes, hey, I'm at 5-5. And then they start to tighten up. And then they start to think about the score and what winning the set might mean for them. So I think that is one component that is definitely important to consider here as well. But yeah, I think you were bringing up a lot of important points in terms of the resilience piece, in terms of a number of different pieces. And I think, yeah, I think players can, you know, people who are listening can start to think about, you know, what are certain situations where you have tried to close out a set, or tried to close out a match, and you feel like you've handled it well. Again, we talk about, you know, controlling the controllables. You can't control ultimately the result. So maybe you get to 5-2 or 5-4, 6-5, whatever it is, and your opponent lets you off the hook a little bit. Your opponent tanks, misses a few shots, double faults, misses returns, whatever it is, and you win that set. But I'm more interested in what are those situations where you've really handled it well, where maybe your opponent has really fought back, or, you know, and 5-2 has turned into 5-5, or 5-2 has turned into 5-4, and then you've had to try to serve forward again after getting broken the previous time. So what are those situations where you've handled it best, and what did you do? What tools did you use in order to do that? Did you really stick to your routine during that time in between points to help you relax, loosen loosen up some of that tension? Did you focus on your breathing? Did you tense and relax certain muscle groups, you know, using progressive muscle relaxation to really try to loosen up tension and feel more relaxed in the moment physically? What was there certain self-talk reminders that you used? Did you visualize ahead of time, as you brought up, Brian? Did you put in the work ahead of time and think about yourself in a closing situation and how you want to handle it? What are the emotions that you expect to experience? How do you expect your opponent to try to fight back? You know, did you mentally rehearse or visualize these sorts of moments in a way where when you were in them, you felt as if you'd been in them time and time before? When you were in that situation, had you practiced it? So I think, you know, being able to look at those situations where you feel like you handled them really well, and maybe comparing and contrasting those situations where you didn't, and what can you learn from those? So I think that is definitely something that would be interesting for people to think about, and, you know, do a little bit of self-learning and self-reflection from really looking back to some of their past situations.
For sure. Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I think kind of gets to another topic I'd like to discuss in the future is, like, you know, there's this notion that people learn more from their losses than their wins. And I don't know that that's actually true. I think it's that they just take their wins for granted. But here's an opportunity, as you're saying, Josh, to really understand the clues of success. And can we use that going forward? I think taking all of that then and putting it into a training plan is very interesting. So when I think about this, and I do some imagery-related exercises along this sort of progression, but you can also do this physically on the court, is, well, let's say we want to practice 5-2 or 5-4. It doesn't really matter, whichever one that you find is more problematic for you. We want to use the skills of breathing for mental coherence, active relaxation, and then bringing positive motion and focus to it. So I'll often have that set up as a workout. I'll have a player do some rhythmic breathing for about 2 or 3 minutes and doing it diaphragmatically. And that establishes a better connection between the mind and the body. It helps turn the mind on. Then do some active relaxation. So what does that mean? That could be like a body scan, thinking into different parts of your body. It could be progressive muscle relaxation, as you noted, Josh. It could be bouncing up and down and shaking things out. These are all active relaxation techniques to help you manage and get to the right level of relaxation tension. And then what's a positive emotion or focus? Well, you could visualize, as you said, success in this situation in the past. You could visualize you're just your best tennis, a peak performance of something. So now you've got all those things. And then the next step would be, okay, now I'm going to visualize being in that tough situation. I'm going to recreate those feelings. And by recreating those feelings and becoming more accustomed to them, you begin to take their power away. They won't rule you so much because you're making yourself more familiar with these feelings. And the more familiar you become with them, the less power they will have over you. And then the rest of the visualization exercise is to see yourself going through the process of working on your breathing, actively relaxing, bringing a positive focus to your mind, and then working through the situation. And so the more that you can do that off the court, then more it becomes second nature. And then you can do the exact same thing on the court. You don't necessarily have to go through the first three steps, but once you get good at the first three steps of knowing how to breathe correctly, how to manage your relaxation state, how to bring that positive emotion, you've learned now to properly manage your physiology. If you know how to properly manage your physiology, then you can apply it to these different stressful situations. And you can do that through your imagery, and you can do it on the court. We have said in the past, the better you feel, the better chance you have of playing well. And that's true with also focusing on the process, focusing on the controllables. The better you do at those things, the better chance you have of creating a positive result. Not a guarantee, but the better chance you have. And so I think that process of learning to bring mental coherence to your mental and physical state, learning to relax the body to the point of optimal tension, and learning to bring more intentionally positive focus and emotions to your experience, the more success that you'll begin to feel in these moments.
Absolutely. And I think, people can definitely take a lot out of what you just described. You can even rewind and listen to that again, because I think that those three steps that you just described can really provide somebody with that foundation in terms of, you know, how they are controlling what they can control in terms of their own bodies, in terms of their own physiology, in terms of doing everything that they can in order to give themselves the best possible chance to feel good. And as you said, you know, you give yourself a better chance to play well when you feel better, right? And I think, you know, one point I will often make to people is that you don't necessarily need to always feel your best to play your best, right? If you're feeling nervous, if you're feeling tight, tense, that doesn't mean that it's all over, that you're doomed. But hopefully you have some tools to adjust how you're feeling and to impact that. And then you give yourself a better chance to be successful in those moments. So I think that's really key. I think when it comes to other tools, I mean, I think trying to learn from our situation, learn from our experiences, having some sort of reflection process where you can write down how things went out there. And maybe it didn't go well for you. Maybe you blew the lead. Maybe you were in a situation and you were ahead and you lost it. So I think, you know, can you get to the point where you can learn from those experiences and also learn from the other side? Maybe you've been in a situation where you've been the player coming back. And what have you learned from that? How did you feel in that moment? What did you witness or observe from your opponent? And what is there to learn from that? So I think having some sort of reflection process where match by match, as well as practice by practice, we're reflecting, trying to learn from each experience, it makes it a lot easier to handle that situation better and better the next time. Maybe you handled it in a way that you're really happy with and proud of, maybe not, but either way, there's plenty to be learned from that in order to continue to improve and hopefully have a better chance to handle the situation next time.
I think the reflection process is key, Josh, because what are we really trying to create here is some sort of repeatable process. And through reflecting on that, that's then you begin to create more awareness of your own performance, how you're thinking, what you're doing out there, and not just taking things for granted or not examining them at all. So that is really important. And that's why I think much of this begins in practice. So you mentioned several ways we could practice this. You know, one suggestion I would give would be, all right, let's say you struggle with 5-2. Let's have you serve at 5-2 over and over. Don't play out the set. Repeat it over and over again. And then let's reflect on each one. What worked in each one? What didn't work? What do we want to try in the next one? Yes, you may not feel the exact same pressure you feel in a match. But again, go back to what we were saying before. We can create that sensory state out there. We can at least try to create that sensory state and work through it. So much of this experimentation starts in practice, and that reflection process starts in practice. If we go to the opponent, I think the other thing to recognize about this whole finishing thing, Josh, is if you're the one who's on the not so great side of 5-2, you're the two, you have to realize in that moment, hey, you know what? Finishing in tennis is really hard. I need to make this person earn it. By me thinking it's over, I'm making it easier on them. So I don't want to do that. I want to make that other player really earn it because I know how hard it is to finish. Let's see if this person can earn that. So gets back to our sort of, it's never 100% either way. And the more we respect the difficulty of finishing, the more that you can play all the way through the last point, whether you're the one in the winning position or not. I think it's paramount that we learn that, because so many players do get, they kind of get mentally broken. And they sort of just give it away at the end. And that happens more often than not, I would say. Maybe not so much at the pro level, but it certainly happens there as well. But let's not be that player. Let's be the player who is so tough to beat that the opponent really, really has to feel like they earned this match.
Definitely. And I think for most players, after the fact, if they're reflecting on it a couple days later, even later that same day, they're able to recognize that. They're able to recognize that that's who they want to be, that they want to be resilient enough to handle themselves losing 2, 3, 4 games in a row, a set, whatever it is, being a set and a breakdown and coming back. But in the moment, it feels really tough. It feels, you know, our ego starts to get involved. We start to think, oh, I shouldn't be losing to this player. I should have won this match, that things like that. So I think, can we be able to put things like that aside and recognize that ultimately the goal out there is to try to be the best player we can be, the best player we can be, the best competitor we can be. And a huge part of that is that it's not going to be easy out there. Yes, there might be certain matches that are easier. Yes, you might win some matches 6-0, 6-0, or close to that. But generally, it's a fight. It's a battle. We've talked about tennis as a combat sport. It really is. You know, you should be expecting that turbulence. You should be expecting that your opponent to fight back. You should be expecting those ups and downs. And I think if you can be ready for all of that, then it doesn't come as a surprise. And second of all, it's a lot easier to embrace it, right? If you can be ready for those moments, if you can prepare for those when they come, it's all right. Here it is. And I've put in the work to be ready for that. I've put in the work on the practice court. I've visualized this moment. And, you know, when I visualized it, I've really tried to get those senses involved. I've tried to think about the emotions that I would expect to experience and the emotions that I would want to generate in that moment. You know, so I've put in that work ahead of time, and I've learned from past experiences, and I'm ready for this one. Okay, now it's 5-all. It was 5-2. Now it's 5-all. And I can be so focused on those last three games that I'm not present enough to manage this situation of trying to now win a close set. At first, it was about closing out a set. And now it's about, okay, can I win a close set? It's 5-all. Or it's 6-all and it's time to play a tiebreaker. Or I lost that set. And now it's time to play a 10-point tiebreaker for that third set. Whatever the situation, it's about, can we be resilient enough to be accepting of what has happened and be present in that moment and really try to give our best point by point in that moment, regardless of what has happened, because things will happen and we need to be ready for them. We need to accept them, even embrace them. And then we can really give ourselves the best possible chance to handle that next moment.
I think the more also that you develop perspectives around each of those situations so that you can draw from a planned way of looking at this that is, you know, more rational, more facilitative, rather than going to sort of the default type of thinking, which might think you to, or might lead you to think more about how you got here, more of the sort of the negative aspects of the performance. And so to me, this is the part of building a great tennis player, is building a set of, whether you call them a mental model or a philosophy of competition or mindsets or perspectives, whatever you want to call them. That's part of the process of building a great tennis player, so that they, if they had a 5-2 lead and now it's 5-5, they have a way of looking at that that is, you know, adaptive, that helps them. Or even going down 5-6. There's always some way of looking at it that helps them stay motivated, to stay optimistic. Granted, those things are hard. It's easy to get negative and it's easy to get pessimistic. But because it's easy, it's generally the wrong thing to do. So the hard thing to do is generally the right thing to do. And so by creating, you know, I like to call it your sort of philosophy of competition. By creating that and understanding how to look at different situations in better ways, you'll create better ways of thinking, which means you'll create better emotions out there. And then you give yourself a better chance of performing and a better chance perhaps of creating a good result. So I think that's a super important part of the building of a tennis player, is that the building of these perspectives and philosophies that allow you to look at any situation in a match in such a way you can maintain confidence, you can maintain optimism, maintain your belief.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I think that's absolutely key, and being able to, maintain those qualities after things have happened out there is tough. It definitely is, but I think that's, ultimately what can be the difference maker, right? I mean, we talk a lot about with the mental game being a difference maker between people, at a certain level. People have the physical abilities. Yes, there's differences between one person's serve or another person's or someone's consistency, but generally people are at least within the same realm physically, if they're on the same court. But I think a lot of these things that we're talking about in terms of, do you have the ability to keep going in that moment after your opponent has come back? Can you maintain that optimism, that confidence, that resilience after all this has happened? I think some of these details are often, what is the difference between who wins or who loses when the match is close, right? When the match is close, it might be one player steps up and one of their particular, their forehand just dominates. Sure, that can happen sometimes. But I think it's often who handles these ups and downs better, who handles those high pressure moments, who handles that opponent coming back against them, that opponent playing really well for that period of time. So I think, these sorts of qualities can really be the difference between who wins and loses when a match is close, when a match is tight. And so that's over the short term, but also over the long term, in terms of one's career, the people that really develop these qualities and traits are able to handle those ups and downs better in terms of what happens within a match, but also longer term, right? You will go through slumps or injuries or things happen, right? Times where you're not playing your best. But I think the people that are able to keep things in perspective, are able to maintain that optimism, that confidence, all of these qualities are able to, over the long term, also withstand the trials and tribulations that are inevitable in any player's career.
For sure. So I think my last thought on this, Josh, would be to encourage listeners to really practice this stuff with intention, so that it becomes something that you want to do in practice. It becomes a skill, right? Make finishing a skill. Don't just work on the technical aspects of things and the directionals, but turn finishing also into a skill that you feel over time, because it will take a long time, I would say, to become really, really comfortable with that. And there are a lot of things that are going to go into your recipe, but perhaps this can be a sub project of your tennis project, is learning to finish matches. And it's going to involve physical practice on the court. It's going to involve imagery, maybe off the court, and there's probably some imagery on the court. Put it all together, and I think it'll be a really cool journey to see what you figure out, especially when you bring that level of intention and planning and reflection to the practice and competition experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think if I were to end with one thought, it's how can you take pressure off yourself when you're in that moment? When you're at 5-2, when you're at 5-4, when you're at 5-all after someone has won those last few games against you, how can you take pressure off yourself? I think it's so common for people to put additional pressure on themselves. There's already going to be pressure, right? There's There's the match itself that you want to win. There's the score. There's outside influences. There's an opponent on the other side of the net. There's already enough pressure. So can you find ways to take pressure off yourself in these moments? And, you know, that could look like different things. That could look like, you know, not having such expectations. That could look like not focusing so much on your results. That could look like having perspective about winning and losing, knowing that if you lose, it's not the end of the world, and that life will go on. So I think that there's different tools here, but finding a way to take some of that pressure, or at least lessen some of that pressure, is really critical when it comes to these moments as well.
Well, great conversation, Josh. Really, thanks for engaging on this topic today. And thank you all for listening. That's our show for today. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for us, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. You can also rate and review the podcast so others can find it more easily. Additionally, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, so you can be notified of new episodes. You can also check us out on Instagram. If you would like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership, where you can learn more about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.